Welcome to the Immigrant Stories Program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher. And my interview today is with Christina Mace. Now, many people remember Christina from her days at the Pine Creek Cookhouse in Ashcroft, where she and her husband, Greg, served Hungarian cuisine to guests from around the world. But most have never heard her harrowing story of her escape from Hungary as a child. You see, it was late October of 1956, and Christina was an 8-year-old child living in Budapest, Hungary, when the Russians rolled down her streets and crushed students and their demands for a more democratic government. In 2 short weeks, 2,500 Hungarians died, and over 200,000 fled.
During the uprising, my family lived on this beautiful hill called Rozsadomb, which is a rose hill, on October. The youth of Hungary decided to finally rebel against the communist regime, which was far more brutal than anyone in the world had at that time known. And within a few days, the revolution sort of spittled out because the Russians came in with their thousands of tanks to surround the city. And where we lived at the time, became an outpost, and then the tanks started coming up and down our street. Well, we had to have our windows covered with blankets, and we weren't allowed to look out. And during the nighttime, we had to sleep down in the basement. We lived in an apartment building, and we had to sleep down in the basement just in case there was bombings or something. And we heard all the shooting and firing from the city during the whole night. During that time, it was the Russian Soviets were very destructive and brutal, and they killed anyone on the spot they saw. They were ordered to kill anyone if they didn't like them, their looks or whatever.
So needless to say, you didn't go outside. How did you get food, and how did you move around, or did you?
We did. Well, we couldn't go to school. We were pretty much confined to our apartment, though my parents, we had to go get food once in a while. So my mom took us down to the city where all the mass destruction was. And we went there one day and saw the tanks turned over and houses totally bombed out. Even our favorite pastry shop had been blown apart. And we had to stand in line to wait for bread, but I think you just did what you could at best with what you had. And that, you know, my grandmother was a farmer, a wife of a farmer, and so we used to can a lot of goods, so we had a lot of stuff canned. But once the uprising was squelched, we were once again free to move. But during that time, we pretty much held out.
So did your grandmother live with you or near you?
No, our grandparents lived with us. They were our little guardians. My mom had to work sometimes in a doll shop, and my dad works. They both had to work. So my grandmother, when we weren't going to school, she would, you know, be our little helper. We would be her little helper in the kitchen, making Hungarian dough and stuff like that.
Did you have brothers and sisters at the time?
I had two sisters. One was 7 years old. We're just a year apart. We're very close. And I had a sister 3.5 years old.
So you were the big sister.
I was the big sister. yes, I tried to keep my sisters in check.
That must have been terrifying for your parents to have small children and to have this terrible thing happened in the middle of their lives.
Well, you know, they both went through the Second World War. My mother lost her mother in a bomb attack. And both my parents' siblings, my father's sister was married to a Hungarian army captain, so they escaped right after the Second World War. And then my mother's sister escaped, and they ended up in Brazil. So my mother, deep in her little heart, always wanted to reconnect with the family. And I think when the uprising came, it was a t- it was opportunity for them to possibly to leave the country.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Christina Mace. She is describing her escape from Hungary as a child.
Did you know that your parents were thinking about leaving?
They did not tell us. And the thing is, it wasn't like, oh, yes, leave the country. It was against the communists, didn't want you to leave the country. So they had to keep this information very clandestine. It's just in case someone spilled the beans and they would arrest my father. They did not. They only told us the night before we were going to leave that we were going to go on a holiday to a far, far away country. And we were pretty excited, but as we went along the trip, it wasn't any sort of a holiday whatsoever, but it kind of kept us excited for something. And I think our parents, that's why they sort of mentioned it along those lines.
So what day did they decide to leave?
December 5th is when we left the city. So we boarded a train that was very, very loaded down with people and supplies and even live chickens and stuff. We went to the city where I was born called Szombathely. Of course, there was a curfew enforced. And when we got to my relative's house, it was past the curfew and we had to throw little pebbles. My father threw some pebbles into the window. So to alert them they were there. We didn't have cell phones and phones of any kind, actually, that they could have called. And so that when they opened the door, my uncle greeted us with a machine gun. But, of course, they knew who we were. So,
oh. But it was a very, very tense time then. So you stayed with your uncle for how long?
We stayed there for about 3 days. And we had to be held. We had to hide out in their house there too, and their house, as so happened, was right across from this complex that the Soviet Russian army had taken over. So we were so close to, you know, being discovered or whatever. But they made the rest of the final plans, and then we were taken down to the a border town where we started our journey in late one night in the dark.
So, and you still didn't have any idea what, well, I'm sure if there's people with guns around, that must have been a clue for you. Were you scared, or did it feel like you were on vacation?
No, it did not. It didn't feel like we were on vacation at all. It felt more like I was scared, and I think that, you know, as a child, you're scared, but with, you know, your parents are always trying to reassure you that it's going to be okay and we're going to go here, you'll be fine. So the fear wasn't that overwhelming, but I know it was there, you know, especially when we started walking along the border. We first started walking along the border, and my father did hire a guide because it was easier to have someone help you navigate the landscape. And there were three gentlemen coming towards us, and he scurried us behind the bushes. And as it turned out, they also were coming with us, but that just having to hide in the bushes was it started becoming a very scary event. And then when we got to this shed, this abandoned shed, the dog sniffing patrol came by also. And then I was super, super scared. I mean, I remember being so terrified, and we heard the dog barking, and I was like, and my mother finally just said, "Oh, you will be okay, just stay brave and courageous." But you never knew, because if they discovered you, they would shoot you right away.
That was terrifying.
But of course, as kids, we didn't know what that meant or what that felt like, you
yes.
know, to be shot on the spot, what that really meant, you know.
Your parents were really aware of it, though.
I mean, yes, totally.
You were all so small, trying to herd you along must have been quite the ordeal for your parents.
Well,
to reassure you, and
that was so cute. I wonder. Well, the gentlemen that came accompanied us, they actually, my little sister, they gave her sleeping pills, so they carried her, and my mom and my mother and my father carried her, but us, our companions would talk to us and held our hands, and they sort of were reassuring, and I'm sure if they hadn't been with us, it would have been a lot more, I don't know what to say, it would have been more devastatingly scary, because they sort of kept us feeling better.
So this people that you were traveling with sort of took on the role of uncles and aunts.
Yes, they took on this role of making us feel safer, I think,
right.
Is what it was. You know?
Yeah, I mean, good parents and aunts and uncles are good at distraction, trying to allay your fears and create little games.
You know, I don't know. I don't know. Sometimes you feel like you're so scared that you don't even realize how scared you are till after you're kind of like, oh, okay, now. But some of the other experiences, like when we were going down to the border, I remember being so scared in that shed, and you know, having to go to the bathroom really badly, and I didn't know where to go, and my mother just sort of had to help me along with that. And then when we got further down our journey, we got to the Austro-Hungarian border. There, once again, we had to hide in the trenches, dugout trenches, they were always trying to get you through before the guards were coming with their tanks and lighting up the fields. But somehow we were hiding there in the trenches, and then the tanks come and lit up all the fields. And my little sister woke up crying, and and at that point, I think everyone in my family thought this is over, over. But
this is when you were going to be discovered.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. My interview today is with Christina Mason. She's describing her narrow escape with her family from Hungary in the late 50s.
Were you traveling at night mostly? So
we were traveling at night. It was in the middle of the night. During the daytime, you couldn't travel.
Right.
Because you would be seen, and well, you had to do it at night. And certain, I think there were certain times when the patrolling was heavier, so that's why you hired a guard that kind of knew more of when their route was. They were very brave Hungarians, you know, that would do this. This was their mission, is to help as many Hungarians get across as possible. And I'm sure some of them went also.
Yeah. So you're in the trenches, and your sister starts crying, and things look like they might be over for the family.
They were all the communists were ordered to, Soviet communists were ordered to shoot on sight. But by that time, the revolution was over, and I think there was a little fatigue, as they would say now, and I think a lot of the cop just looked the other way sometimes, to just let certain people go by, and they didn't shoot everyone all the time. So, you know, they might have said, oh, well, there's a little baby there, let's let them.
You're from the trenches, where did you go from there, from that part?
Well, we had to just finish crossing the field, which actually had active landmines buried here and there. And we had to finish crossing that field. And then after we crossed that field with no incident, then there was a small river.
But let me just stop you for a second. So this is where you were hiding in trenches. And then from the trenches, and you were moving at night. You had to move through a minefield?
Yes. Which that I didn't know about till later on, but we
did. They have flashlights and?
Well, we just had to, I don't know, there was no lights. We just had to take very careful steps. just very carefully. No, it wasn't that long of a distance. And then we got to where the trickle, the river was dividing Austria-Hungary. And of course, we were too little to cross it, but it, as an adult, it only came to your knees or above. And but of course, it was winter, December, freezing cold waters. And so this gentleman that were accompanying us, they took us on their shoulders across to the other side. And there the Red Cross was actually waiting for us. And took my mother and the children, drove us to the school. And I remember we were given hot chocolate and fresh oranges because we were just freezing anyway, cold. So that was such a relief.
I can imagine. How many days did that take you, the journey?
From Budapest to the border, it was less than a week. I think 3 or 4 days at the most, because we had it all planned beforehand, and the only hiccup was staying in the city where I was born to finish the rest of the plans and making sure we had the right guide and all that kind of stuff. And after that, it took us a couple of weeks because we were transported in buses to Salzburg, and then actually to Munich also, and then, but I don't know, I have to ask my sister, she has the details, but we were transported in buses from places to places because at that time was also the Panama Suez Canal thing going on, and so there was a lot of political confusion and unrest and how to help people that were leaving Hungary.
But you were a refugee. You had to leave with nothing.
Yeah, we had to leave with nothing. We left with nothing, except we were well-dressed because my mother made us wear a lot of layers, and that's about all we had. And we might have had a few little clothes. And I know that my dad actually brought extra cash or money to in case he had to bribe any of the... Bribery was a big thing, you know. If you could bribe a soldier, then you were like, okay, lucky. And sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't, but he had that extra money. But I think he gave it all to the guide at the end.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my guest today is Christina Mace. Christina is describing her harrowing journey with her family out of Hungary in 1956.
So then you had nothing. You were starting over completely. You were in Salzburg. And how long did you stay there?
We stayed it was a 2-week process, and then we ended up at the American Army base. You know, we had, as I said, relatives in America. So we would have been more easily relocated than someone that didn't have anyone to go to. So we were our relatives were waiting for us. But you still had to take a boat across the ocean to come to America. But as it turned out, President Eisenhower took 3 families on his plane on December 25th, and one of us was our family. They were looking for a few men that or families that spoke English already, so they could translate what was happening in the country at the time. Uh-huh. So my father spoke a little bit of English, but the rest of our family didn't speak a word of English.
So they came into this refugee camp or area and sort of found people who could speak.
I think they had to limit it to, it was like 3 families, and I don't know exactly how many people, but it's in the archives of the United States somewhere in the.
So this was President Eisenhower's initiative to let's get some of these folks and bring them back, and maybe they can help us explain what's going on, what the Russians are up to.
I think there was a impetus for that, is to be able to to talk to someone to find out what was really happening. And also, it was a way of him, well, that's my personal interpretation at this point. It was to sort of show the world that he was trying to help the Hungarians, even though he didn't go there to squelch the communist regime.
Right. Didn't confront the Russians.
Right. And I don't think anyone was ready or willing to confront the Russians at that time in history.
Yeah. So you landed in what?
We landed in Fort McGuire. Then we were taken to Fort Kilmer with the army base itself, because one was just the airfield. And my mother got bronchitis, and we had to stay there. And I remember actually sleeping on the top of a bunk bed and rolling off one night. And I, for the rest of my life, I never wanted to sleep on top of a bunk bed. But my mother recovered, and then we took a, we were put on trains to Quincy, Illinois, is where my father's sister lived, and her husband was a doctor. He became a doctor. She had three kids, and there was three of us, and we stayed there for really not that long. I think maybe a couple of months, because my father actually had a very distant relative in the Chicago area who had come to America probably in the 1800s, and he had a moving company, so my dad went and wanted to work for him. Well, my father was very well educated, and he was a CPA in Hungary, so when we went to the Chicago area, he went back and learned and worked for his license and became a CPA, and we moved along very quickly in our financial security in America.
A fortunate thing.
I know it was, but he was very smart and very ambitious, and you know, the American, what they call the American dream, you know, it was like, okay, you can make $1 million really easily in America. But back then, you know, that was a big dream, but he did try to go for that anyway.
So when you, at this point in your life, when you've gone back and telling this story, you think about what it's like to be a refugee, especially a little refugee. When you hear the news today about all the refugees in the world, what does that awake in you?
Well, actually, it wakes a lot of empathy in me, and I, having come from a communist country and a lot of devastation in when I was a young person, always think about how difficult it would be. I even think how difficult it would be just now if I had to pick up, or even during the time when my children were little, and go across a border under those circumstances. So I have a huge empathy for immigrants. I embrace the immigrant story, and I feel that we just can't do enough for people that really need, that want this opportunity to live and make a living and be free of torture and governments that are just horrible to their people.
Were you ever made to feel like the other? Were you made fun of, or
well, when I was a kid, I was made fun of because I didn't speak the language, and my pronunciation of the English language was very poor most of the time. So, I remember actually being in school and having to get up and read something from a book, and I mispronounced quite a few words, and the whole class laughed, you know, got up and laughed at me. So I've always had been terrified speaking in public since then. But
yeah, that would ruin it for you, I would think, as a child to learn that, to have that lesson. Yeah,
it's a very interesting balance, and I've been thinking a lot about this. It's a very interesting balance of being integrated in a country and then trying to understand your background, your heritage, and still hold on to that and still become an stellar American person. So I went to Switzerland, and I've been around the world, and I think the world has a lot to offer. Every country has something amazing to offer, and every human being is just tries to do the best they can to love where they're from and still contribute to society in many different ways.
That was Christina Mace. A special thanks to Christina and the folks at English in Action for the Immigrant Voices program produced by Alia Howe. That's where I first heard Christina tell her story. This program is dedicated to Christina and her parents and all those refugees who've had to flee their homelands, leave everything they know, and try to seek shelter from the storm in a strange land. You've been listening to the Immigrant Stories program. For more on immigrant stories, go to immigrantstories.net. Thanks for listening.